Hey, John, is it conceivable that the Sphinx could be 100,000 years old, 200,000 years old, maybe even older?
Yeah, it's conceivable. It could be very, very, very old indeed. And one of the things that I would hope to look into initially, if we get our geo panel over there, obviously, as I said earlier, really we're going to concentrate on the water weathering. The actual dating of it is a much more complex technological matter requiring samples, and I've learned that that's the S word. You don't bring up the word samples. Eventually, if we establish the water weathering so that the opposition just has to swallow it, mm-hmm. at that point we can start talking about the possibilities of actually putting a date on it, which is not so easy because you can't carbon date stone. There are techniques of isotopic analysis where you test for the decay of radioactive isotopes within the rock, and you need to triangulate. You need two rocks where you know what the dating is, and then rock X, et cetera, et cetera. This is complicated. But eventually, it might be possible to put a date on it, and there's a lot of evidence out there, again, absolutely ignored and dismissed by the paradigm police of the reigning establishment that says that history goes back way, way, way further into the past. The work of Michael Cremo,
sure,
Forbidden Archaeology. Even if he's wrong sometimes, there's 900 pages of evidence there. I mean, I wish that he had simply taken that it wasn't this 900-page book, but that he had taken 20 or 30 of the bits of evidence that were the most easily substantiated,
right,
and concentrated upon those, because I feel that he's really onto something, and that human beings have been around much, much, much longer than anybody thinks, and at a much higher level, and that this gets us into the whole question of history as cyclical, the Hindu theory of the yugas, and this gets very interesting. I believe you've had Walter Cruttenden on,
sure,
with the whole idea that the yuga cycle, or at least a cycle within the cycle, and maybe a much longer cycle, corresponds to the precession of the equinoxes, the 25,000 plus year cycle. And actually, I don't know if you know this, or when Walter was on, I'm going to be one of the speakers with a whole bunch of other very interesting people in October, called CPAC, C-P-A-K, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge. It's going to be held out in California, and people may be interested in looking that up. There's a website, CPAC, C, capital C, capital P, capital A, capital K, CPAC online. .com, I think, or .org, I think so.
Okay.
But that's going to be a very interesting conference looking into this whole question of age and cycles and so on, because those cycles are, and this is something that's really new to my own thinking. I knew about the cycles forever, as long as I've been interested in these subjects, but when I came across this notion that, let's say, the most graspable cycle was not the millions of years that are accorded it in the usual way that you read about it in Hindu, you know, in the Hindu scriptures, but really was a mistake, or at least, without going into the big song and dance, that it fits within a precessional cycle of 26,000 years, 25,920 canonical number. Then my ears perked up, because that was graspable, and once that's understood, once you take the question of cycles and you understand it, and it's not that difficult to understand analogically, that it's similar. Let's say it's called the Great Year, by Plato called it the Great Year, and it's relative. It you can compare it to a normal year that we experience. So there's a winter, there's a spring, there's a summer, there's an autumn, and then it starts all over again. And if use an analogy, for example, the cycle, let's say the shortest cycle that we're familiar with is day and night.
Right.
If you imagine a creature, a fully sentient creature that lives 1 minute, if that creature is born at midnight and it's raining, it can have no idea, unless word has been handed down to myth and legend, what a minute, what a life that lasted a minute would be like at noon and when the sun is out. To extend that analogy to a year, let's say a creature that lives a day, and the day is in February and it's still raining because it lives in Wales, well, that creature can have no idea of what, again, unless the word is filtered down through myth and legend, of what one day of life might be in June in California. It just can't have any idea. And I think that's where we stand in terms of the cycles of history. I'm not sure where we are within the cycle, somewhere around February or March. I think maybe we're at a turning point.
Long way to go. What was on the face of the Sphinx, John? I mean, was it recarved?
Well, it's definitely been recarved because the head is too small. But what it was recarved from, we absolutely don't know and probably can't know unless somebody comes up with some kind of fantastic Curlian photography that allows you to see what the face once was. Might have been a human being, but it might have been a lion. I think that the Sphinx is a Leo marker. It's meant, whenever it is built, it is meant to signal the ingress into an age of Leo. The last one was about 10,500 B.C. This is the date favored by Bavall and Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
The Egyptians themselves, in their own chronological tablets and papyruses, there's one called the Palermo Stone and another called the Turin Papyrus. Schraller de Lubitsch did a major study of this. They talk about their own civilization beginning somewhere back around 34,000-36,000 B.C. Well, that would be the age of Leo before that, and that's the date that I currently think most plausible for the Sphinx. And that's backed up, as I said, by the Egyptian texts themselves, but it could be the cycle before that. But,
well, why did they recarve the face? What do you think happened?
Nobody knows, because we don't know when it was recarved or by whom, at what point, but probably because, this is one of the reasons, because it had been, see, the face doesn't get covered over with sand. The body is terrifically weathered, but once it's covered with sand, it's protected. But the face, which is a harder outcrop of stone, is not protected, so I suspect it was completely ravaged, and whoever it was at whatever period of time decided to recarve it into that particular face, which is actually, as our forensic detective Frank Domingo pointed out, and travelers used to see this all the time when they went to Egypt in the 19th century and said, well, hey, the face of the Sphinx looks like, really looks African, not North African, mm-hmm. but Sub-Saharan right. African. And it does. You look at it in profile, and Domingo, who's the expert, an expert on faces, said, well, yes, it is consistent with that kind of physiognomy. So we don't know, and we probably never will know.